I have to admit, when I saw today's topic, I was expecting, tinfoil hats and blurry photos.
Sure.
But the sources we're looking at today, they're not just speculating, they're actually doing math.
It's a huge shift in perspective, isn't it? We're taking the actual statistical probability of keeping a secret.
Right.
Usually we argue about conspiracy theories from a political or cultural angle. But the research here, specifically the Grimes viability model, treats a cover-up like a radioactive isotope.
It has a half-life.
Exactly. So the mission for this deep dive is to use that and some forensic analysis to figure out which theories are mathematically impossible and which ones are, well, terrifyingly plausible.
The Grimes model is really the backbone of this. I saw the equation in the notes and it looked a little intimidating. Can we break that down a bit?
Yeah, it looks complicated, but the concept is actually pretty simple. Dr. David Robert Grimes basically built a formula based on just two key things: the number of conspirators, which he calls N, and the amount of time that passes, T. The math proves that the probability of a leak doesn't just rise slowly as you add more people. It skyrockets.
So the more people in on the secret.
The faster it dies.
Yeah.
The sources use the moon landing as the perfect benchmark for
A
this.
huge operation.
Massive. To fake that, you'd need about 411,000 NASA employees and contractors to be in on it. The Grimes model shows a plot that big would be exposed either by a whistleblower or just sheer incompetence in about 3.7 years.
So these huge global plots are basically ticking time bombs.
They just collapse under their own weight. Which brings us to the theories that rank high on the feasibility scale. They're not massive, they're small.
This is Occam's razor, right? The simplest explanation.
Precisely. You reduce the conspirators, and the secret's viability shoots way up. That's why the death of Jeffrey Epstein is ranked number one for feasibility. It wasn't some global plot, it was a very localized failure.
And the details there were more than just a weird feeling, they were specific.
Oh, yeah, these were forensic anomalies. You have mandatory 30-minute guard rounds that were missed for 6 hours. You had two cameras outside his cell simultaneously malfunction.
Wow.
But the real smoking gun in the report is the medical evidence. Dr. Michael Baden, a top forensic pathologist, he identified a fractured hyoid bone. That is incredibly rare in hangings, but very, very common in strangulation.
A case where the physical evidence just doesn't match the story. And number two on the list, the JFK assassination. It seems the government itself kind of agrees with the conspiracy theorists.
That's a great irony. In 1979, the House Select Committee officially concluded that JFK was probably assassinated as a result of a conspiracy.
And they had evidence for that.
They did. They based it on acoustic analysis of a fourth shot, a shot that came from the grassy knoll. Again, a small, siloed operation. Mathematically, it's entirely feasible.
Okay, so small cells can keep secrets. Let's flip to the bottom of the list, the low feasibility stuff. This is where physics starts ruining the party, I guess.
It really does.
Why is microchips and vaccines all the way down at number 14?
It's purely an engineering problem. For a chip to fit through a standard 25-gauge needle, it has to be microscopic. And a chip that small physically cannot hold a power source or an antenna that could transmit any data.
So it's not about intent, it's just about the hardware.
Exactly. Physics doesn't care about the theory. And it's the same with Flat Earth at number 15.
Which was solved centuries ago.
Geometry solved that in 240 BC. Ships disappear hull first over the horizon. It's a zero feasibility scenario.
So you've got the math of leaks and the laws of physics, but then the sources pivot into why these stories stick around. And it seems like both political parties are actively playing a game with this stuff.
It's a bipartisan mechanism. The sources call it the rule of neutrality. Both parties generate false narratives, often to test loyalty, but both also expose real conspiracies.
Okay, let's look at the scoreboard. On the false narrative side, you've got the Republicans and birtherism.
Right. The claim about Obama's birth certificate, easily disproven, but it worked as a kind of loyalty test. But the Democrats have their own mirror image with the Steele dossier.
That was the report alleging Trump-Russia collusion.
Funded by the Clinton campaign and the DNC. It was used as a roadmap for treason allegations, even though the FBI knew it was based on, and I'm quoting here, hearsay and third-hand gossip.
But, and here's the twist, both parties also expose real conspiracies?
They do. Republicans pushed the Hunter Biden laptop story. Intelligence officials called it disinformation at first, but it was later forensically verified.
And on the other side, Democrats exposed Watergate.
Proving Nixon's hush money scheme wasn't just a theory, it was a criminal conspiracy. smoke and gun tapes and all, shows you can't just blindly trust your team.
It's all so messy. I guess that's why the data says 78.6% of U.S. adults believe in at least one of these alternative narratives.
And I think the key takeaway is all about proportionality. The likelihood of a conspiracy is just inversely proportional to its size. Massive plots are doomed to fail. But small, siloed operations, the math says those are entirely possible.
Which leaves us with a really tough question to think about. As our trust in institutions seems to decay, are we actually getting better at spotting elite misconduct, or are we just using this stigmatized knowledge as a defense mechanism against a world that feels more and more chaotic?
That is the question, isn't it?